going on.
Ooh.
Not allowing us to meet in person. Brenda's delicious cooking. So I miss all of you, and especially Brenda and her good cooking. So.
Yeah.
Bonnie, are you aware of anyone who wished to make public comment this evening? And are they with us?
I do not. I believe everybody that is on is with one of the localities or a presenter.
Terrific. And I will be quick to point out, those of you, if you're watching Rita, it actually is a halo. It is not her window. That is her halo shining. Thank you for getting all the material out and making us look good here, Rita.
You're welcome.
Next item of on the agenda, minutes of August 17. Those were distributed to you ahead of time. Does anyone have any objection to adopting them as presented?
Frank, I have just one suggested correction on page 3, first paragraph at the top. While I very much appreciate being associated with Rockingham County, I am not part of the Rockingham County employees. I am with the city of Harrisonburg.
Excellent. Love your neighbors, but not working for them.
That is correct.
Fair enough. Thank you. With that substantive change, is there any objection to adopting the minutes as presented with that correction?
I move for approval.
Thank you, Terry. Second. Not sure who had the second there.
George.
Thank you, George. Got him, Rita?
Yes.
All in favor of approval, signify by saying aye or thumbs up.
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate that change. Reports. I have a very brief report. Let's see here. Thanks for sharing, Chris. The my brief report, for those of you who have been following along on the I-81 committee, we still are around and working. Our next meeting is scheduled via, I think, WebEx, not Zoom, from 9 to 10:30 on Friday the 23rd, so this Friday. The agenda was sent out just a brief time ago, and if you go to the I-81.com website, you can get the latest and greatest on that. And the first piece of business will be organizing. You said selecting a new chairman to run the meeting. I'm sure all of you, I'll just remind you that there have been $52 million in CARES money in our Planning District Commission. PDC staff is helping to track how those dollars are spent, and will be able to provide us some a great deal of support in making sense of the numbers as we work through this process. I think every municipality has been exceedingly responsible and conforming with the guidelines, and excited for all the small businesses that have benefited from these distributions during this bizarre time. And for the executive committee, I'll put you on notice. It's review time for Bonnie, and I'll be contacting you to complete some documentation with me as we prepare for her review. If any folks in the PDC have any input for Bonnie's review, would love to hear from you. Don't want to exclude you, but also keep it narrowly focused for paper purposes. And unless there are any questions, I will bounce pass it to Bonnie.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Friedman, and good afternoon, everyone. It's so good to see you. I look forward to the day that when we can meet again in person and enjoy some of Brenda's good cooking. But in the meantime, it's good to see you all virtually. I hope everyone is well and safe. We here at the PDC continue to work well in this new workplace environment. We are still working under a hybrid schedule with half of the staff coming in to the office every other day and then teleworking on those other days. There's always a core team of staff here on a daily basis, including Rita, who holds down the fort for us. It's been working out extremely well. We're fortunate that we're in the line of work that we're in where we can telework and where it is an option. Many people cannot. So we are starting to explore what telework and remote work looks like in the future and how our region might take advantage of this new workplace phenomenon. We have been hearing, and maybe you have been too, about people who are leaving the larger metro areas like DC and New York and Boston and relocating to areas like Stanton and Lexington and the Shenandoah Valley. Into some more rural areas because they can now work from anywhere remotely. So we'll be working with our partners like the Shenandoah Valley Partnership and others to study telework as a business attraction tool and a workforce talent recruitment tool and how our region can position itself to serve our existing workforce and businesses, but also to serve a potential in-migration of new employees and businesses. You'll hear more a little bit about teleworking and our telework center inventory that we're going to be doing with some of our EDA CARES funding, and Elizabeth will talk a little bit about that in a bit. We have two positions that we are filling here at the PDC. I think I mentioned this at our last meeting. The one position for the Planner 2 position has been filled. Nathan Garrison has been hired and will start work on November the 2nd. The second position for the Transit Program Administrator has been advertised and interviews will begin this week. And we hope to make a decision on that position in the very near future. I am also pleased to report that after a year of negotiations, we are finally under contract with the state for the Body Broadband project in Rockbridge County. As you may recall, we applied along with our co-applicant, Arc Electric Co-op, a year ago for $2.2 million to provide broadband infrastructure in Bath and Rockbridge County. Unfortunately, the project was challenged by an incumbent carrier in Bath County, and we had to work with the state, work with Rockbridge, work with Bath, and Arc to rescope that project. We ended up having to remove the areas that were slated for broadband in Bath County in order to be able to move forward with that grant. So the revised project will now provide over 100 miles of gigabit last mile fiber, bringing high-speed internet to close to 500 people in residents and businesses in Rockbridge County. Chris, or is Jay on the call? Would you all like to say anything about what this project means to Rockbridge County?
Yeah, certainly. I don't think Supervisor could make it. Lewis could make it tonight, but we do appreciate all the work at Central Shenandoah Planning District Commission, and of course, BARC's input in the project as well. We see it every day of how important broadband is, especially with the kids learning from home, remote learning, that type of thing. Businesses, it's almost like it is a utility, you know, almost equally important as any other utility out there. So we certainly appreciate all your work.
Thank you, Chris. So this project is slated to begin at the end of this calendar year, the first of next year, and should take about 9 to 12 months to complete. But it will be very much needed in those rural areas of Rockbridge County. The last thing I want to report on is we're very excited about two rail-to-trail projects that are coming to our region. And I'm going to turn it over to Ann to tell you about these two projects. But before I do that, I'm glad to answer any questions about any of the items that I just reported on. Anybody have any questions about any of the programs that we're working on? All right, Ann?
Yes.
I'm for you. There you are.
Thank you, Bonnie and Mayor Friedman. So we have two greenway trails under development that connect our PDC to other regions of the state. The first is the Crozet Blue Ridge Tunnel, which connects Augusta County and Waynesboro to Nelson County and the village of Afton. It goes underneath Rockfish Gap and Afton Mountain. So after 20 years of work to acquire the tunnel from CSX and assemble the grant funding needed to restore the tunnel and construct the approach trails, the tunnel trail is planned to open to the public before the end of this calendar year. The tunnel itself is about a mile long, and it's nearly 4 miles from trailhead to trailhead, one in the village of Afton and the other just off of 250 on the way down the mountain to Waynesboro. The tunnel foundation held a ribbon cutting and a dedication with Governor Northam and several state agency secretaries, some CTB members as well, on September the 23rd at Veritas Vineyards. And last month, PDC staff had the opportunity to tour the tunnel and walk all the way through it for the first time, which was a tremendously special day. And thanks to Nelson County, who gave us the permission to go in a little early. I have a few photos from that, but I'm going to show those when I wrap up talking about the other Greenway Trail, which is in a much earlier stage of development. The tentatively named Shenandoah Rail Trail is envisioned to follow a disused Norfolk Southern single-track rail line that begins in Timberville in northwest Rockingham County, near Mr. Trumbo's house, and travels 38 miles north to Strasburg, Virginia. It possibly could extend beyond there. The trail would connect 8 towns, 6 Civil War battlefields, the brand new Seven Bend State Park, 2 counties, Shenandoah and Rockingham, possibly more, and cross 2 PDCs. So right now, a coalition of volunteers, local staff, PDC staff, advocacy groups, local and state elected officials are all quietly working to build support for the project. Delegate Tony Wilt, Senators Mark Obenchain and Emmett Hanger shepherded an FY21 budget amendment through committees in the General Assembly and the State Senate to dedicate some DCR funding to evaluate the feasibility of turning this disused rail line into a rails-to-trails facility. Bonnie serves as the vice chair of the Rail Trail Partnership. Her counterpart for Northern Shenandoah Valley Regional Commission, Brandon Davis, is the chair. And incidentally, Virginia Mercury published a nice write-up of the work that was done during this special session, legislative session, and some of the work being done locally. So that was published today on the Virginia Mercury website, if you're interested in taking a look at that. But I'm going to, first I'm going to go into present mode and then share a couple of these pictures really quickly, since that is always more interesting than hearing me talk. So here's our fearless leader standing at the entrance to the Western Portal. And we were all, you know, many of us have been up here to the tunnel and walked in from one side or the other before, but have always had to stop at the bulkhead that was installed there in the middle in a failed attempt to store natural gas back in the 40s. So to approach either portal and literally see the light at the end of the tunnel was just tremendously exciting. And that is exiting the... I guess that's exiting the Western Portal. So here we are on our fabulous fall day. This is almost our entire staff. So that was a great day to be out and experience that. So here we are walking in on the eastern side where there's a lot of water even today. This is a map of the Shenandoah Rail Trail Corridor. This actually shows it ending in Broadway, but it's really, yeah, they're flipped.
It does end in Broadway.
It goes all the way into Broadway?
It does.
Okay, I thought it ended in Timberville. And then it continues, thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that. It continues northwards catching all of our small towns along US Highway 11, Mount Jackson, Woodstock, Toms Brook, Mariton, all the way up to Strasburg. So this obviously could just be transformative for a huge swath of the Shenandoah Valley. And there's just a nice image of a little tiny piece of that trail, but like most rail lines, it follows the gentlest grade. And so even though we're surrounded on both sides by mountains and have a lot of hills in the valley, this would be, you know, 38, possibly more miles of gently rolling trail through the valley. So I'm happy to try to answer any questions, but I know we also have a lot to cover tonight.
The Broadway to Timberville piece is actually the most scenic portion of that trail.
It goes right by your house, of course.
Do we need an easement from you? Maybe I should mention that.
I see how he's going to fund his retirement. He's feeding hikers. Any questions, Frank?
Yeah, Frank, if I could, it's Adam. And you probably mentioned this at the beginning of your speaking there, and I probably missed it, but at what stage are we in exactly? Like, what are the steps, and then what stage are we in for that trail?
The coalition is slowly building support, and that feasibility study, which DCR would fund, and then they would report back to the General Assembly in a year's time, I guess would establish whether or not it could be acquired from the railroad and by whom and who would own it and what it would cost to do some of the necessary repairs. So, you know, that'll be the next big step. The group, it has some technical assistance from the National Parks Rivers and Trails program with Ursula Lemansky. So she is providing some technical assistance, but I actually haven't been on the last couple of board calls, but Bonnie has, so she probably should chime in here.
Yeah, no, I think what you said is fine. It's in the very beginning stages, Adam. Just to give you some perspective on the Crozet Tunnel project that is going to open to the public next month. That was in the works for 19 years. So it just takes a long time to, you know, get these projects. I mean, because the cost is, you know, astronomical. You know, you have to jump through so many hurdles, one being, you know, purchasing it from Norfolk Southern. It'll be a long time before, you know, any of us see anything, you know, in the ground, but you have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions for Ann? So we won't put that as an objective to get that completed next year as part of your expectations for 2021, Bonnie.
Bonnie, am I remembering right that the hybrid trail took about 10 years to do?
I think that's correct. The hybrid is down in the Farmville area, and right. It is now considered, it's owned by DCR, it's a state park. And I forgot what the price tag on that was, but yeah. It was also very, very expensive endeavor.
But Adam, I want you to know it might take half as long, but still a long time.
I think I might still be physically able to actually walk along the path, so I appreciate that. And Brent, you were saying that you acknowledge that it did come into Broadway. Is it come in there by the chicken barbecue pit? Is that where it sort of begins?
That's exactly where it starts. Yep, you're right. Yep. Spot on.
Yep. All right.
Excellent. And thanks for sharing those. And keep the shoulder to the plow and make things happen up there. With collaboration, can happen much, much quicker, as Kim pointed out. And high hopes for positive things in those two counties. So thank you. Mm-hmm. Bonnie, did you have anything else on your report?
No, I do not. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Next, a treasurer's report. I'd call on Terry Short.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The financial statement has been provided. I'm just going to go over that just briefly here. The CSBDC's position still remains strong. There was a delay in the collection of transit funds as we awaited clarity for the CARES Act funding. That's been reconciled and collections have resumed. You'll note in the income statement comment that through August that wage expenses were lower than expected due to staff turnover. Of course, with all the good news and hires that Bonnie mentioned, that should sort of reconcile itself over the next quarter. Also to point out that for the terms of the contract to support that expanded broadband in Goshen that Bonnie mentioned, that we met those certain milestones and received our payment during fiscal year 2021. So expenses related to that primarily occurred in FY 2020. So the profit shown is just really a result of timing and not some windfall. There's no scratch off tickets that we won or anything like that. So unfortunately, next is that we've got our auditors, our hard work on the 2020 audit. That should probably be wrapped up pretty soon, right? And so we'll have that, and they'll present those findings at our December meeting. That is, I think, the extent of it. You notice the last bullet there of the foundation of several new projects were later in the first 3 months of fiscal year 2021, and we'll see those moving forward, and we'll provide an update at our next meeting. So that is the extent of it. Lee, is there anything else I'm missing? Yeah,
that was great. Thank you, Terry. If there are any questions, I'm happy to field them.
Yeah, thank you.
Any members have questions for Lee or Terry relative to the financial report? If not, Terry, I would take that as a motion for approval of your report.
Yes, please.
Welcome the second.
This is Carolyn Dahl, second.
Thank you, Carolyn. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the financial report signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Glad we have an agreeable bunch this afternoon. Thank you all. Go Virginia. Big T, what you got for us?
We just missed this. I had a fantastic update in about 48 hours. But we actually have our meeting tomorrow morning. Looking forward to that. We were contemplating doing an in-person, but we're sticking with Zoom for right now. So we'll have that meeting tomorrow morning, I think at 10 a.m. So hopefully have a little bit more insight. It'll be my second meeting. But to date, 11 projects have been approved for funding in the Region 8 Council, representing about $1.9 million of Go Virginia funds, with just 1.5 of local matching, for a grand total of $3.5 million. Three of the 11 projects that are closing out are the Rockbridge Area Manufacturing, Advanced Manufacturing, or RAM, the Stan Innovation Hub Tech Lab Feasibility Study, and the Shenandoah Valley Talent Solution Strategy. A couple of highlights: the RAM welding project in Rockbridge is closed out, but per the COVID-19 requirements, the BTI canceled classes beginning in March. The training resumed in June. Pre-COVID, 100% of the graduates had been hired by 13 different companies with an average salary of $46,000. BTI purchased the adjacent building to expand training space and installed 27 welding booths, and that school has a waiting list at present. The BRCC, The BRCC Cybersecurity Jobs Project has trained 53 students and placed 32 of those students in cybersecurity jobs. 45 cybersecurity credentials have been awarded. That project closes out in January 2021. And, inside baseball, we're having some conversations with Dr. Downey about exploring other opportunities and partners. We have extensive wait lists for that program as well. Working with additional support for that, maybe even outside of the Go Virginia program, but Just a heads up. The Regional Council noted meets tomorrow and will consider a proposal by the Shenandoah Valley Partnership for a site enhancement project that will include the evaluation of 10 sites within Region 8, and 7 of those are in the CSPDC region. Yay for us, so that's awesome. And basically what that will do is it will evaluate the, you may know that the Virginia Economic Development Commission, they have a project tiering, a site selection tiering program where they do sort of a readiness assessment of tracts of land that are ready and zoned appropriately for commercial or for other industrial development. And what this will do is the study will help facilitate what additional steps are needed in order to complement and expand and grow this tiering. So you can get up to a tier, they started, I think, tier 4 or tier 5 sites and work their way all the way up to tier 1. Tier 1, you're basically going to see in like a Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads area, just because of overall infrastructure. But, you know, if we can get, we've got, I think in our immediate area, I think we've got 2 tier 3 sites, and several tier 4 sites. And so this will help navigate for communities, member communities, the path to success in the VEDP program. So that is my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Terry. Any questions for Terry? Terry, I have one. The cybersecurity training, do you know what the starting salaries are, average out of there?
That might have been in the last report. It was, I don't want to guess, but it was, I think it might have been in the $50,000-$60,000 range.
I want to say it was like 53,000.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah.
And are most of those being placed geographically in our PDC? Or in Virginia?
It would be in Region 8, and which is our PDC and the Northern Shenandoah PDC.
Gotcha.
We're not sending them back to Northern Virginia, if that's what you're asking. We're keeping them here.
One interesting thing. So we did a partnership with the Blue Ridge Community College and created an online outpost in downtown Waynesboro. And the upstairs was leased to the cybersecurity firm that I think has employed 13 people out of that program to date. So, which is great. It's right in this part of our downtown.
Terrific. Thank you. Yep. Gary, if you don't mind sharing with Rita the information for the Zoom meeting for anybody who may not have plans to attend tomorrow morning and have an opportunity to join the Go Virginia meeting. It's an easy commute on Zoom.
It is. Yeah, I'll be sure to do that. I'll do that right now. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Next item on our agenda, presentation for Agricultural Enterprise Center Feasibility Study. And I won't steal Rachel's thunder in introducing our guest, Kathy Nyquist. And Rachel, take it away.
Thank you, Chairman Freeman. It's great to see everyone, even if it's virtual. And it's great to introduce this project and our special guest tonight, Kathy Nyquist from New Venture Advisors. I wanted to give a general overview and history of the project before turning it over to Kathy to get you guys kind of up to date. The question I get asked the most when I start to talk about this project is, what is an agricultural enterprise center? What is it and what does it do? So Kathy will be discussing this more in detail in a few moments, but in its essence, it is a commercial shared use facility. If brought to fruition in our region, would help to support our small and mid-sized farms. We got the idea for this project through, of course, our work with the Fields of Gold Farm Trail, but then also just being a part of such an agricultural rich heritage and region. We've been hearing about some of the challenges facing our small farms, challenges in distribution, challenges in infrastructure building, and costly infrastructure building and facility building in our area. And then, of course, reaching new markets. Those are also big challenges facing our small farms. So this facility has the potential to assist with any one or all of these needs, By reducing some of the risk and burden of facility building by any one operation or farm. In 2019, we applied for a U.S. Department of Agriculture Local Food Promotion Program grant to fund this study. We were very excited to be one of 42 projects out of 215 that were funded through the LFPP grant, and the only project funded in Virginia. We then matched this grant with a Go Virginia Enhanced Capacity Building Grant, and together these are the funding sources for this project. On completion of the study, which is scheduled to be in May 2021, we'll have identified what components will be the most beneficial to local farmers. Of course, we'll be exploring physical locations for the facility, and we'll structure a comprehensive business plan to be used by an operator or operators to implement and really run with in our region. So the study region includes the PDC counties of Augusta, Bath, Highland, Rockridge, and Rockingham counties, with the addition of Page and Shenandoah counties to our north. One of the challenges of this study was such a large study region, we needed to pull together a study team with members who represent the region's localities, key organizations involved in the project, and then of course end users as well. So we currently have a 10-member study team serving for this aspect, who include Brenda Mead from Stanton City Council, Scott Lilly from the Farm Credit of the Virginias, Casey Armstrong, Rockingham County Assistant Administrator, Rebecca Castle, Augusta County Economic Development Director, Devin Anders with the Interchange Group, Michelle Bridges with the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Margaret Ann Smith, who farms South Lex Cattle Company in Rockridge County, Megan Welsh with the Virginia Economic Development Partnership, Travis Carter with the Shenandoah Valley Partnership. I believe he's on this call today. Thank you for joining us. And Keith Holland, who farms Three Rivers Farm in Rockridge County. So this team is very engaged and happy to be serving as representatives in their communities. And they're a great way for you all to stay up to date and get involved with the project as well, from now through the duration of the study. So to catch up to where we are today, in March, we released an RFP to obtain a consultant. Again, we were very, very encouraged and excited by the number of applicants. We received 14 highly qualified applications representing firms from across the country. I think there were 8 states that had firms to apply. So a very competitive selection process, and we were very lucky to find and begin working with new venture advisors. So we were most impressed with their team that they pulled together and their very practical approach to the project. They are an agriculturally focused firm based out of Chicago, Illinois, and specialize in strategic consulting and food system planning and infrastructure development. Which brings me to introducing Kathy Nyquist, who founded NVA in 2009. Kathy has over 20 years of marketing and strategic leadership experience, and has put together a very strong team to perform different aspects of the project. I believe two are joining us today, Caroline and Melissa. So with that, I will turn it over to Kathy. We thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you, everyone. It's great to be here. I'm sharing slides that I hope you received an advanced copy of. This is a little bit updated because the project has been active over the last week, so you'll see some updated information here. But this is a project that we're extremely excited about because it's very much on trend. We're seeing an interest in this kind of integrated agricultural center in a lot of the places that we do our work, which is across the United States. And you'll get to see Caroline and Melissa along the way as well. They're leading the project. They've been on the phone with you and your stakeholders over the last few weeks and months, pouring through survey responses that just came in today. So they really know a little bit more closely what we're hearing from stakeholders in your area, but I'm pleased to give you an overview of this kind of project and our approach to it. The agenda, we're gonna go through this very quickly. So here's what I'm gonna suggest. If you really want to ask a question while we go, please just unmute and ask. Because my intention, my assumption is that you've read this. My intention is to get through it quickly, do some Q&A at the end. But if we're moving too quickly, please let me know. Or not, if we're not moving quickly enough, let me know that too. So on this slide, I just wanted to point to, this was actually in our proposal. This is what we synthesized from the RFP of the overview of the project, the components that were most important to the study team. And the goal, as Rachel has already mentioned, was to support business diversification, particularly in the agricultural sector, and do that through two things. Number one is provide value-added product processing capacity, so that gets to the facility aspect of the project. And second is to open up new markets to agricultural producers or producers of any kind, whether they're actually making products or growing products. So you can see in the center of the page, there are a number of components of this ag center that were in the original hypothesis. And also a a pretty clever set of research questions that are really important to answer that we're in the middle of obtaining answers to. But the real beneficiaries of the project are food entrepreneurs and farmers, although there will certainly be other beneficiaries as well, including consumers and other individuals that are engaged in the food industry. So I'll start with this real quick definition of a food center. It's a little bit jargony, but we'll get into some of the details in a moment. So it's a facility or a group of facilities where multiple types of food enterprises co-locate. And they each have their own space, but by co-locating, they have benefits that accrue to their individual businesses just by virtue of the fact that they are located adjacently. And these community food centers, these food centers often bring real benefits to communities as well. And in fact, much of the work we do, they're called community food centers. And this project is called an ag enterprise center, but there may be some components of this project when it is realized that will have real benefits to the community as well, and a definition that we'll describe in a moment. So these are all what I just talked about, sort of unpacked a little bit more, and I'm not going to stop on this slide. I think you have it, and you can refer to it later. If you don't have it, we'll be certain that you get a copy of this. What I want to show you is sort of in a picture how these are coming together in communities all across the United States. And this, each one is different, but this is a very common approach to building a food center in a particular region. It often begins with a food hub, a place that's aggregating product from local farmers and opening up market opportunities to new customers. Once you've got that distribution hub built and the warehouse operational and serving farmers in a region, the question then is, how do we continue to support farmers? And in the work we've done over 10 years, usually the very next thing that is desired by farmers is to give them value-added processing capacity so that they can not only sell raw product, but also convert that product into, higher value cuts of meat or jams and jellies and that sort of thing that they can actually make more money at. Once you build that kitchen for the farmers, there's a opportunity to open it up to other parts of your entrepreneurial community. The farmers usually need it certain times of year. When they're not using it, there's an opportunity for other types of entrepreneurs to use that facility. And these are called shared kitchens. The most successful shared kitchens also offer business incubation support. So it's the technical assistance, the wraparound services that help startup companies get their businesses to scale. The next thing that's often on the mind of these entrepreneurs, if they are successful, is I don't want to be in the kitchen making this myself any longer. I want another team, another crew to make my products according to my specifications. So a lot of food centers are putting in what has a lot of different names. They sort of mean the same thing, but the thing they have in common is that it is a a facility that is producing on behalf of others. It's a co-packer or a commissary kitchen, a central kitchen, a cannery, and there are probably three or four other descriptions that we could provide for this space. And you'll see that this is coming through as an important feature for the food center here in the Shenandoah Valley. When you've got that food hub going, the next two things you might be thinking about are a grocery market or a cafe for food service, because they can use all of the products that come through this system. We don't necessarily think about it as waste, but it is a very beneficial way to ensure that everything that comes in through the food hub is used in some way. If you're building a cafe, it's an opportunity for culinary training, if that's of interest in the community. It's a big need in most places across the United States, at least it was before COVID, a real shortage of trained culinary professionals. So lots of these centers are providing workforce development programs as an additional offering. And if you've got that set up for culinary training, it's also set up to do a demonstration kitchen and classroom spaces that can be used for a variety of things, not just nutrition and culinary training. This is sometimes the differentiator, event space. Often when we're doing this analysis, we don't see that these centers necessarily pencil out financially. And in some places, especially rural, the component that makes them work is event space, because in many rural communities, they don't have a lot of options for large gathering spaces for meetings and weddings and parties and that sort of thing. So sometimes the event space carries the food center. In a more urbanized area, if you have an indoor-outdoor concept, it's also a place where you can bring in food trucks. And now you've sort of completed the circle, because food trucks are great for the event space to do something a little bit special, and they need a commissary kitchen in order to equip their vehicles to go out and sell on the road. So this would be like, you know, everything in the kitchen sink kind of food center. And now I'll explain what happens in some communities as we're doing this work. There's a desire to turn some of these components into more than just commercial spaces, but use them for programming. And here are a couple of examples. If you have a cafe, it can also be a place where you can offer a hot meal service for people that are not able to pay for meals. If you have a market, it can also serve as a choice pantry. With the food hub sort of serving like the back office, the back room of a food bank. And then if you are creating a shared kitchen, it can also serve as a community kitchen where there may be people that just even can't afford to rent the kitchen for a few hours. So you can have a few hours available for members of the community to use at no cost. So this is a map, we call it a bubble diagram, of what a very well integrated food center might look like and the ways that it's used. All right, now here's back to our project. This is our scope of work. We have five parts to the project, and we're just getting to the end of part one, and that's the market analysis. So as of today, we've completed interviews, we've done three surveys. Well, it's one survey, but essentially they're three in one. We've conducted secondary research to compile a landscape analysis, and we're just starting to get into it and start to draw out the themes and implications. If we were to have chosen the timing for this call, we would have had it in a couple of weeks when we have more insights to share for you. But this is now the point where it starts to get really interesting. Based on the findings in this market analysis, we will perform some business analysis. And the main component of that is to come up with an operating model. What's the mix of all of those features that are right for the Shenandoah Valley? And when we present that to the study team, we're going to bring case studies to sort of dimensionalize how these things are working in other places. So that's the phase that we're entering into, is the business analysis phase. And this will also be a phase where we're starting to put some dimension to this facility. How big is it? And what are the sites and space requirements? And we'll start to create some visualizations of the space. And we'll use those visualizations in the community meeting, phase three, which we're planning to do virtually.
at the end of January. And that's just something for you to, you know, put in the back of your mind, is that we have this coming up. If you want to attend that, it would be terrific. But we'll actually have renderings of the space plan building program. And then based on the feedback that comes from that, we'll refine the operating model, we'll refine the design, and actually perform the final financial analysis, and then pull together the final reports. The last thing I want to point out here is the final deliverable that we're going to provide to you is an outline of a request for information or a request for interest for operators. We would not recommend going into any of these next steps until you know who is going to take on the business risk of the food center. And there are a number of ways that this could look. You're going to have an owner and an operator. Someone's going to own the facility and someone's going to operate it. It might be the same individual. You could have a scenario where it's a publicly owned facility and that works with a private operator. There are some examples, very, very good ones in your own state, of these kinds of public-private partnerships. Or it could be somebody owns the building and they hire a private operator, or it could be a private owner of a facility that also runs it. So that, before we move into doing any kind of site selection or final plans that you would actually put in front of investors or bankers, we would like to help you find that operator, because that is who the bankers and the investors are going to be investing in, as much as the concept.
Hey, Kathy.
Yep.
The finished product that we're working towards, are there some existing, is that something you'll tell us later, ag centers that are around the state and or country?
Yes. You know, those case studies that we're gonna show you in part two,
okay,
will be very informative. And we will probably reprise those in the final reports. Usually in an appendix, we'll have a number of case studies that are examples of similar types of infrastructure.
Thank you.
Here's the survey responses. We just closed the survey today. So you can see where folks are responding from. The larger dots means more respondents from that particular area. In the tally, you can see we had the most responses from Augusta, Rockbridge, and Shenandoah counties. And then we also kept the surveys open to folks outside of the study area, because they're part of the regional food system. So especially if they're buying, we're interested in hearing from them. It was a long survey. Not everyone finished it. We actually had 140 people start the survey. And after looking at how far some people got through the survey, and 11 people were knocked out at the beginning because they didn't fit the requirements of the types of respondents that we were looking for. But we have 67 completed surveys, so it's certainly sufficient to draw the kinds of conclusions and make recommendations for this study. This is the summary of who we spoke to in the interviews. You can see that of the 37 completed, the majority were farmers, and the main farm types fairly evenly split between livestock farming and produce farming, but a very nice selection of farmers and food businesses, which we believe will be the primary users of this type of a center. So they were able to give us some of the qualitative insights that are really important as we evaluate the quantitative findings from the survey. And they were also very helpful. We did 6 of these interviews before we even drafted the survey to get a sense of what was important for us to include in those surveys. So I'm going to ask Melissa and Caroline to chime in a little bit on this slide, because again, they're the ones speaking directly to stakeholders. But again, this is early analysis, but what we're seeing that seems to be very promising is a very high degree of interest. This is not a ho-hum. You can even see in the number of survey responses and the number of people that we were able to contact on the phone. There's a lot of interest in the region about the types of benefits that a food center like this is going to bring. And it's a very diverse agricultural base. So, it isn't going to be a one-trick pony. There's going to be a
a diversity of business enterprises and products that are moving through this center. There's also a very strong buy it local ethos. There's more nuance to it than that, but the idea of supporting a local food economy is not a new idea to stakeholders that are involved in the study. And that's really important for any project like this to be successful. And there's a really, it's always great to know that people want to learn more about how to, get more involved in their business or in the food industry, in the food system. And so education is a very strong theme. So if the food center does include classroom space, there are some very specific types of curricula that we could recommend that are brought in to help boost this local food economy. Some things that are a bit unique here that we don't see in every study, it's a really large area. It's not the first time we've done a project in a large area like this, but this is particularly large area. So we're actually already starting to think about hub and spoke approaches. So yeah, maybe there's one hub, but maybe there are sub hubs that are serving specific functions across the region. We'll have some examples to share with you of how these have been handled elsewhere. There's also an interest in retail. We need to get under the hood a little bit more on that. But interest in prepared foods, like the center making prepared foods from local products, but even potentially vending or serving right on site. And, this idea of community that I was talking about a few slides ago, we're hearing it, but we're not quite certain yet how to characterize it. But it's important for us to know, if this thing is just a warehouse and selling, moving stuff in and out on trucks, it's not really serving as a community food center. Even though it's feeding the community, it's not placemaking in that way. But there seems to be some interest in creating more than just an industrial center, but actually putting some components here that bring people together over food. Melissa, Caroline, anything else that you would like to add?
Sure. I think this is, on point with what we're hearing. So I think this is very representative. To speak to kind of the local surgeons or the local pride, that is something that we're hearing across all stakeholders. So all the audiences that you saw on the previous slide around farmers and buyers and food businesses, everyone kind of has this local pride. And so what we're also hearing, kind of around that, that speaks to some of these education pieces and that is that there's really an interest in building awareness about the Shenandoah Valley as it relates to marketing and branding of products. And then there's an opportunity to kind of expand the reach there. So I think that's a very, kind of positive common thread that we've heard out of, most of the stakeholders who we've interviewed.
Okay, here's where we're heading. So right now we are heading into analysis. We're going to be developing the operating model recommendations shortly, and we'll have a meeting in November to present our first pass at that. And then we are going to be conducting virtual site tours. The needs of the site are sort of coming into focus now. We've done a little bit of work on this already, but we'll actually start working hopefully with a commercial real estate broker to start looking at some specific sites that could suit the needs of this facility. And then start putting diagrams together that will be the show and tell for the community meeting in January. Based on that feedback, we do some refinements. We do all of the financial analysis toward the end of the project. And then you can see we have a few phases of drafting the study. It's not represented here, but along with the final presentation will be the RFI for the operator. So here again, January, that's when we're having this community virtual town hall, another opportunity for you to plug into the project. Seven deliverables, and we haven't even given you the first one yet. So we're working on number one, and we'll be presenting that report in
November. And essentially that will include our research findings, the recommendations for the operating model, some case studies to bring them to life, and some things to think about for the site of the project. Okay. Is there anything you'd like me to go back and hit again, or other questions that you'd like to ask now? I think Rachel is also going to have some Q&A time in her wrap up.
Yeah, this is Frank again, and several of us travel frequently, and it's always fun when you can go and see a place in action. Something that I've been to that's similar to this is Tamarack in West Virginia, which focuses on West Virginia products. But are there locations or sites, or is that yet to come, that, that we could visit or see or look at a website of one of these in action?
I think so. When we do the case study poll, we'll try to find a few that might be in a driving distance for you to take a look at. And the most of the ones that we've been involved in so far have been, you know, they're still in development, so there isn't much to see yet. But there are examples of most of those components. There isn't one that I know of that has pulled everything together yet. But we'll give some thought to that, Frank, and include that in the case studies.
Thank you.
Frank, this is Bonnie. There is a food hub over in Charlottesville. It's in the Ivy area, the right. local food hub. And that has basically one component there, which would be the food distribution and the food hub. We'd certainly take a tour there. There's also one in Halifax, in the town of Halifax, that just opened. Mm-hmm. And they have some pretty neat things going on there as well.
Right. Thank you.
Bonnie, I think there's one in Roanoke too. I think I was at a PML conference a couple of years ago, and there was some schools that had been converted into basically a shared kitchen, grocery outlet, and pickup and delivery system all in house out of some old elementary schools that had been abandoned.
Love that idea.
I'll ask around and see where that is. I want to say it's Price's Fork. It's actually further south than Roanoke. I think it's in the New River Valley, PDC. I think I've heard about that.
Perhaps over in Blacksburg, Price's Fork. Other questions for Kathy? Kathy, appreciate you and your team being with us, and look forward to the next deliverables. And if there's anything the PDC can do to support your efforts, we stand ready, willing, and able.
Thank you, Frank. I have a feeling you will be called upon for that.
Good. Rachel, any closing comments, observations?
Sure. Of course, thank you, Kathy. That was a great presentation, very informative. And I did just want to recap real quick that any of you can get in touch with myself, of course, or the study team members to get information to help promote this project in your specific communities. And another way to get information on this project is to go to our project website that can be found easily on the cspdc.org website. Go to the home page, and to the left you'll see the feasibility study that you can click on. There'll be lots of information and really good shareable links that you can put in newsletters or put in any, you know, applicable outreach. So, and then also stay tuned for, Kathy mentioned the virtual community meeting that will be coming up in January with more information. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel. Yes, and with the format of the January meeting, commute should be easy regardless of the weather in Chicago.
Thank goodness for that in January. Anyone who's traveled through O'Hare knows what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. thank you, Kathy and your team, for being with us. And you're welcome to stay. You're also welcome to slip away if you would like to do so.
Which I think we will. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Next item on the agenda is the SEDS committee update. Ms. Elizabeth.
Good evening. The CSPDC board serves as the SEDS committee and is responsible for developing and updating the SEDS. So SEDS is short for Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. It's our region's plan for economic development and ties into our PDC's designation as an economic development district through the Economic Development Administration, U.S. Department of Commerce. So following about a year-long planning process, in October of 2018, you acting as the SEDS committee approved a completely updated SEDS for the region. And that established five visions or priorities. And they are to grow the size and skill of our workforce, to address infrastructure needs such as broadband, transportation, site improvements, housing options. The third vision was to expand our region's economic activity through diversification, attraction, and retention efforts, strengthening our downtowns, and promoting quality of life assets, specifically outdoor recreation. Number four was to support agribusiness and expand markets for our region's agricultural products. And number five, and I'm gonna read this one word for word, was to increase our resilience to natural and man-made hazards, economic downturns, and social vulnerabilities that impact communities and businesses in the Central Shenandoah region. And today, that last one on resiliency is getting a lot more attention. So a couple of times a year, typically in April and October, we like to highlight activities that are accomplished through the implementation of the SEDS. Our April update was canceled because we all hadn't quite shifted to Zoom meetings yet. So if you go all the way back to October, that is when Greg Campbell, the executive director of the Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport, joined our SEDS committee meeting and presented the airport's economic outlook and master plan. And at that time, the CSPDC was also assisting them with an application to EDA's Public Works Program for funding to construct two corporate hangars with office space. And in June, the airport was notified that they were awarded $2 million for the project, and they are now under contract with EDA and moving forward on the project, which is expected to create 50 to 75 high-paying jobs. This was definitely a regional effort. All five counties and the five cities supported the project. So the CSPDC hosted a different kind of announcement at the airport on August 24th, during which Mr. Dana Gartsky, who is the head of the Economic Development Administration out of the Washington, D.C. office, awarded EDA CARES funding to our PDC as well as three other PDCs in Virginia. We were awarded $400,000 with no required match to assist our region and localities with recovery and resiliency efforts over the next 2 years. We were eligible and invited to apply for this funding because we are a designated economic development district. and have had a very long-standing partnership with the Economic Development Administration. This funding, I just want to say, this is huge for our agency and for our region. And we have a team of staff members that is working on the grant's elements, including developing a pandemic recovery and resiliency plan that will include all 21 of our localities. And we will be coordinating with you to incorporate and reference that plan in the region's SEDS. We also will be completing a regional telework inventory and analysis to determine benefits to our region's residents and companies, as well as opportunities for attracting people to our communities, particularly our more rural areas. We will also be launching a COVID-19 recovery webpage on the CSPDC website. We hope to have this up around the 1st of November. It will include a data dashboard, as well as updates on the pandemic plan and telework study, funding opportunities, and other pertinent information for short and long-term recovery efforts. So you'll be able to find all things related to COVID-19 recovery in this one location on our website. As I think Mayor Friedman mentioned earlier, we are following the CARES Act funding that is coming to the region. And we're also using the EDA CARES funding to look at better ways to outfit our facilities for teleconferencing. And of course, we will continue to support our localities through participation in managers' meetings and task forces with project development, grant identification, and grant writing. I want to thank you for your longtime support of the PDC's activity in economic development. The CSPDC has been an economic development district for 40 years. And because of this board's commitment to collaboration, updating the region's SEDS, which you just did a couple of years ago, and setting regional priorities, we are in a much better position to respond to the economic impacts of the coronavirus. The SEDS has always kept us focused on projects that strengthen our communities. We've been working with local governments for years on broadband. We've worked on downtown revitalization projects and workforce housing, sewer and water projects. We've pursued funding for agritourism and more recently for the Ag Enterprise Center. We've helped with Go Virginia funding for welders and cybersecurity analysts. The Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport received a grant to expand their facilities because our region is an economic development district. These types of projects are all called out in our SEDS. Additionally, the SEDS has always helped us to recognize that everyone has a part in economic development. We already have partners in place that are used to working with each other, and this has made a big difference with recovery efforts. Organizations know their strengths and know how to best contribute to recovery. This includes United Way, Chambers of Commerce, downtown associations, the Small Business Development Center, the Shenandoah Valley Partnership, Community Foundations, Stanton Creative Community Fund, the business community, our universities and community colleges. They have been participating in the SEDS for years, and it has been a real benefit now to already have those partnerships in place. As with everyone, the CSPDC is learning new ways of doing things. Our staff is definitely up to the challenge of assisting all your localities with recovery and resiliency efforts. And as plans and projects unfold, we will be sure to keep you up to date. We are also confident that the measures, plans, and programs and partnerships that are put into place will continue to serve us well in the future. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about the SEDS, our recovery efforts, or anything else, economic development.
Anyone have any questions? Elizabeth, the full grant will come to the PDC, and then you all will determine how best to utilize those funds with the different projects, correct?
Right. So EDA gave us the option of four different activities, and we could choose among them. We chose to do all four of them, and that's the pandemic plan, figuring out technology for our staff to better communicate with the localities and for you all to better communicate with each other, as well as providing technical assistance and recovery coordination.
And my perception is you're not going to do that evenly for $400,000 in each. If you can just, as we progress, let us know how much gets spent in each bucket would be great. And did I hear you correctly confirm it's a two-year grant? So we're not under the same pressure of the December 30th. This gives you till the end of 2021?
Right, so we have a little bit more time than the end of the year. We have 24 months. So we need to wrap up our activities by June of 2022.
Terrific. Any other questions? Chad, you're looking for dinner at this point. Well, I'm proud of the work that staff has done and the fact that prior commissions have embraced this idea of adopting the SEDS program and obviously reaping the benefits of it, and our communities will be stronger for it. So thank you for bringing that forward.
You're welcome.
The next item on our agenda is not printed. We do have a chirp that Bonnie was going to bring forward. Bonnie, if you want to.
Sure. Very quickly, we did receive a request that came in after your packets were mailed out. So I'd like to address that tonight. It is an application that's been submitted by the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, for their FY22 Performance Partnership Grant. They are requesting $18 million in federal funds to provide their water activity program known as 106 Water Activity. The primary goal of their project is to improve the ability of DEQ to identify, regulate, and protect wetlands throughout Virginia. Staff endorses this CHIRP, and so we ask for your approval of it so we can respond to DEQ.
Bonnie, is there a number associated with that CHIRP that could be utilized for the motion?
No, there is not.
Your date on it?
It's a DEQ FY22 Performance Partnership Grant.
Very good. I'd ask for y'all's consideration.
Move for approval.
Thank you, Kim.
Second.
Gary, thank you for a second. That's for the fiscal year 22 DEQ partnership CHIRP. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approval, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all very much. Anything for the good of the cause, concerns, questions, thoughts, praise? Hearing none, for those of you who didn't attend the VML conference, I'm not sure there actually was one because I didn't get to see the Mangers sing Mustang Sally this year for the first time in years, but there's always next year. But thanks to VML and their staff for putting on what I thought was a great great event, and I hope some of you had a chance to attend that. If there's no other business to come before us this evening, we will stand adjourned. I'll ask the administrator to sign us off. Everybody have a great evening, and we'll see you in December. And don't forget about Go Virginia tomorrow morning.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.